Welcome, friends and fiends of the pod. I'm your host, film critic and comedian Nate Wyckoff, reminding you to like, subscribe, and go to cultandclassicfilms.com, where you can purchase exclusive cult ultra-low-budget films from us. And you can also subscribe and have them delivered monthly at a big discount to your door every month. So don't miss out on that. And unlike Rowdy Piper here in They Live, you don't need special glasses to see these deals. All right, so please, thank you, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Cult and Classic.
Welcome, friends and fiends of the pod, to a new episode of Cult and Classic Films Podcast, the podcast where we bring you two thematically linked films, one mainstream and one cult, and talk about them both. This pairing that we're going to do part one of today is full of movies that I really enjoy. Part one of Look Out Below. If I paused, it's because I forgot. Yes, I forget where I am sometimes too. There's so much going on here at Cult and Classic Films Podcast, and it's all good, but we will get that out to you in the future. Okay, so Jeff Tucker is sharing files in the meeting. I don't know what this is, Jeff. Anyway, I couldn't figure out how to share a file, so that's brilliant. All right, any whoozits? With us today, we have the return of original contributor Jeff Tucker. How are you doing, Jeff? Just muted.
We're off to a great fucking start.
You know, we've been plagued by technical difficulties today. It's all right. It's all right. Jeff will unmute once he learns how computers work. He's only an electrical engineer. Okay.
You muted me, bud.
I did. Okay.
I was waiting for you to unmute me.
Well, I can mute you, but I can't unmute you. It won't let me.
Oh,
okay.
I didn't know.
Okay.
You need consent so to unmute.
I thought you had like a server mute power or something.
No, I don't. I can mute. I can't unmute. All right.
Anyways. Everyone.
I'm your host, film critic and comedian Nate Wyckoff. We're talking about Tremors 1990 today as part one of our Look Out Below series. Seriously. Tremors is a fun movie. We're going to talk about it. Maybe not everybody feels that way, but I certainly do. It is one of the early roles by Kevin Bacon, and there's some stuff to talk about there. Also stars Fred Ward, Victor Wong, Reba McEntire, and Michael Gross, a whole bunch of great people. All right. As I said, longtime contributor Jeff Tucker is back with us. How are you doing, Jeff?
All great. I've been, you know, cosmic for the last, you know, century. You know, time, you know, flows a little different for me, and I've conquered many alien species, and I have, I've come back to you in your time of need.
Is that a sex thing? You know, conquered many
welcome.
Alien species?
Doesn't have to be, but all right, well. I sure made it.
It just makes me, for some reason, it makes me think of, remember, it was in one of the movies, the Dragon Ball Z movies that I don't think is canon anymore, where you meet who is it? It's Vegeta's brother, and he has a wife, and the wife is like a blob. It's like,
Nathan,
it's like a totally.
Are you making this shit up? Because I don't remember any of this.
No idea what you're talking about.
I'm not making this up. We will. You know what, everyone? If you know the answer to my, if you know what I'm talking about, go ahead and send us a screenshot to info@cultandclassicfilms.com, and we'll share it on our media accounts.
Sure, there's some fucking DBZ nerd who knows.
Well, of course. If it's not us, it's kind of surprising. All right. We also have the gentleman here who cannot keep his mouth PC, Tad Mastroianni. How are you doing, Tad?
New pod who dis.
All right. So as you can tell, we're very comfortable today. And I'm excited. So Tremors. This movie came out in 1990, and it has been played, I think the official count is like 260 gazillion billion times on the Sci-Fi Channel, TNT, USA, many, many networks. The reason is it's a pretty entertaining, not very heavyweight, practical effect laden science fiction film, kind of horror film that is PG-13. So it really hit that sweet spot of movies that could be played on TV over and over again, and you wouldn't have to force the kids out of the room. People wouldn't complain that somebody said the F word before 11 o'clock at night on cable television, all that good stuff. As I said, Kevin Bacon is the lead in this, although it really is an ensemble cast. I mean, he's maybe got slightly the most screen focus, but everybody has their part in this movie, and there are a fair amount of folks. The movie takes place in the fictional town of
Perfection.
Oh, Perfection. Thank you. The reason my brain stopped there for a minute is because I just did a binge of every single Tremors film there is. I believe there's eight right now. And then there's the TV series that ran for a couple of years. And then there was a TV pilot movie, which unfortunately was not picked up, but actually had Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward in it. So it's kind of unfortunate to get picked up. But anyway, the movie series is still going, and I'll mention that later, some details. Okay. It is in Perfection, this little town. I think it's in Nevada. Is that where it's supposed to be? Or in New Mexico? Some desert hellscape. It could have been filmed outside my front door, actually.
It's in the desert.
Yeah, and I love it. And it's one of those ghost towns, except that there's like one tiny general store, and that's about it. Everybody has like kind of nothing little jobs, either farming or subsistence work or geology study, something like that. And so we've got this collection of characters, each who has their own little past. We have Michael Gross, who plays Bert, with his wife, played by Reba McEntire. Michael Gross is one of those names that you may not recognize the name right off the bat, but you would recognize his face 100%. He plays Bert Gummer, who is the lead in every sequel except for 1 and 2. And he plays this crazy conservative prepper gun nut, who is very lovable in the end. Reba McEntire plays his wife. She does not continue on through the series, obviously, because she's Reba McEntire. Direct-to-video is not quite her thing. We have Charlotte Stewart, who plays Nancy, a lot of people in here. But Kevin Bacon plays Val, and Fred Ward plays his friend Earl. And they're sort of, I wouldn't say layabouts or drifters, but they're always trying to look for a way to get out of Perfection, to get money, et cetera, because they do odd jobs all around and are just kind of slumming it in a way. And we have also Victor Wong's character. Victor Wong, if you don't know who he is, you do know who he is and just don't know it. He was in Big Trouble in Little China. And that's really all I need to say, but he's been acting since time immemorial. So he plays Walter Chang, who runs the general store. In the future iterations, his family members run the chain. And yeah, there's some other folks in here as well. Tom Woodruff Jr. plays the monster character in this movie. There's probably several people that really do, but he's the only one credited. It is just an awesome, weird setup where these people end up being attacked by these giant underground worms that hunt by sound vibrations through the earth. And they have little tongues that come out and snag people and pull them under, or objects, whatever. They're fairly intelligent and seem to problem solve. And these folks have to sort of fend off an attack by, I think, 4 of them. And so we get various ones being picked off, various people getting picked off, and it's all practical effects. No 3D here, no early 1990 upsetting 3D to be seen. All right. So first I'm going to go to you, Jeff. Jeff, had you seen Tremors before?
Oh, of course. I turned on a television and had the Sci-Fi Channel at some point in my lifetime.
This is a movie where, like, if you haven't seen this movie, why the fuck are you listening to this podcast?
It's you need to remedy it. I mean, if you haven't seen it before, whether or not we oversell it, because here's the thing about it. I feel like there are movies, we know this, we know there are movies that are just incredible movies, and I don't want to watch them all the time because they're heavy or it's just too much of an investment, but I know they're fantastic. And then there's movies that are bad and they're a struggle to get through. There's, of course, movies that are bad movies that are also fun to watch. This is one of those movies that's not a bad movie, but it's also not a, like, you know, like a crowning achievement of cinema, but it is just very watchable. It's like you can kind of pick it up. The reason why it was a perfect TV cable movie is because anytime you popped into it, you could just start watching it. It's one of those, you know. It's like for my wife's family, it's the tornado film. How come my brain is not working today? There's just so much other stuff.
Twister?
There's so many things I could tell you, huh?
Twister?
Correct. Yeah,
yeah,
Twister.
The one that's going to get a fucking sequel now?
The sequel. And I don't think it has any of the original characters or really has anything to do with
shit.
It. But any who's it's, I'm sure there's a cameo here or there.
Probably.
All right. Tremors. So yeah. So Jeff, you've seen Tremors. Tad, obviously you saw Tremors as well. Do either of you remember the first time you saw Tremors, or what you remembered about Tremors if you hadn't seen it recently?
Yes, but Jeff can go first because you asked him first.
I did.
No, not really. I feel like it's, one of those things that you watch and then you forget, and then you come back, because I don't think there's anything really you know, groundbreaking about this, like you mentioned earlier. Yeah. That you're not like, you're not changed by this film. So it's like, I don't think it's you're not taking anything with you.
So you're saying this is like a solid B, Jeff?
I don't know. I'll make a further comment on that. I'll let you tell your grand story of the first time you watched this and how it was a profound effect on you and how it changed you.
Holy shit.
Just so that we can have a little conflict here.
I hate to disappoint everyone. That's not fucking happening. This is a movie. All right. This is a movie. This movie actually is really important to my family. And I don't mean like it's ground, like Jeff saying, it's not groundbreaking. This is just one of those movies where the machine for 30 years, and I mean the media machine, has basically been, this is required watching. You know, like you get those required reading books in school. This is everything. Is making sure that you watch this movie at least once in your life, whether you own cable, whether you own nothing. They have tried to make sure that, especially us in the millennial generation, you should have seen this movie at least once accidentally. You should have walked into your best friend's house, like 1997 or something like that. Like, what are we going to do today? I don't know. What's on TV? Oh, Tremors is on. What movie is this? It's a movie about worms going through the ground. But I do remember, actually, the first time that I saw this movie, my dad actually sat me down. This movie is one of like the holy movies of my family. And my dad in particular loves, for some reason, movies that involve worms, because he loves Slither. It's one of his favorite.
I love that movie.
And Slither is a fantastic movie.
You know, it's been a while since we've had a James Gunn reference on this.
Right. Yeah. Only been like, I don't know, 3 episodes.
Yeah. It's been a while.
But yeah, it was somewhere in 94, because I'm pretty sure I was in fourth grade. And my dad was like, we're going to watch Tremors. And I'm like, what's this movie about? And it's like, these things are underground and they sense sound. And I'm like, okay, sounds cool. I sat down and I was like, yeah, that was a pretty good movie. It was funny. We all thought it was funny. My parents absolutely will rewatch this movie at least on a yearly basis, if not more. They probably will flip through channels and they will go, Tremors is on. Let's go get a drink. It's time to watch Tremors. This is how I feel, you know, like when we did our like favorite movies, this is The Big Lebowski for me. The Big Lebowski is on. Holy shit, I'm going to sit down. I don't care where in the movie it is. I'm going to sit down and watch it because I love it that much. I don't personally love this movie that much, but I do. I have a lot of it burned in my memory because I've probably seen it like 60 times accidentally. And again, in high school, when we all were watching TV, because what else the fuck were we going to do? Do homework?
Streaming did not exist. Gen Zers listening, I know you're there, and I appreciate you very much. You're our future. I'm not being flippant about that. Actually, I really do appreciate it. But we lived before streaming, and I'm not that old.
But we had this thing called Comedy Central where you could watch the same 15 fucking movies on a rotation easily. How many times have we all accidentally watched Rocky Horror or Peggy Sue Got Married, Tremors? How many? Think of all the other movies. Because you know the bumpers, Nate. You know the
Joe Pesci one.
Burn in your head.
The Joe Pesci.
Yes.
Yeah, I forget that one. Anyway. Words are not, our names are not my strong point today, apparently, which is problematic for a film critic and film historian. But yeah, you're right. This is one that everybody has kind of seen. And if you haven't, you're probably a little bit younger than us. And I do think you could stand to watch it. Here's the thing that I love about Tremors beyond its, I mean, I think we all kind of agreed that its biggest strength is that it's inoffensive and it is a very watchable movie. The pacing is not so ponderous that you get bored enough that you turn off something. You know what I mean? And there's always some sort of action coming up fairly quickly. But what I absolutely love of this is the practical effects they have. So here's what a lot of people would probably complain about now about big practical effects, especially big monster practical effects. Sometimes the monster, because it's made of plastic and polymers and latex, etc., sometimes it doesn't move as wide a range as you might want. For example, the worms, they call them graboids, they name them on because they have these tongues that fly out and grab you and try and pull you into the mouth. And yes, they burrow under the ground and punch you by vibration. They, when they come out of the ground, they have this sort of multi-piece insectile jaw that opens up, and it looks great. But when they come out of the top, they can't move their head up and down very much, right? It's just kind of a flailing thing. Now, in the real world, we know that some animals don't have a wide range of motion that way. But when you watch a movie, you expect a fluidity to it these days. And it doesn't necessarily have that level. But it's handcrafted. It's so good. And they did a really great job with sort of being creative with having special effects at a very low budget, and also that looked realistic without being difficult. For example, we get a lot of the Bugs Bunny tunneling effects, right? The tremor, the worm is coming, and the ground sort of bows up as they travel along, and you get a trail of bowed up, and it works well. We have a couple of really cool shots that I love of the worms tunneling in, like passing through a tunnel they've carved. So it's all black, and it's as though you are embedded in the dirt, seeing the worm travel in darkness. Here's something I'd be interested to know exactly is the actual tongue parts. A lot of times, sure, they're a little stiff sometimes because of the reasons I mentioned, but they're also very fluid, especially when they come out of the mouth. They sort of roil out of the mouth of these creatures. I wonder if sometimes they've used the effect where they've actually, instead of, you know, pushing the prosthetics out of the mouth, they've actually had them at the end point and then reeled them in and played it in reverse, which is a pretty common effect, or a pretty common method to get some complicated effects where you need something to start at a place that you can't get it rationally in a shot. For example, if I were to punch Tad in the nose in direct, you know, with a camera right on it, it would be too dangerous for me to throw the punch directly at Ted's face. I'm not that good. I certainly don't have any control over my depth of perception. But what you would do then is I would start with my fist at Tad's nose and then pull it back quickly. And then you just reverse the film. And it looks like I am slamming my fist into Tad's hair of face. If you're on YouTube watching us at Colton Classic Films, then you will see Tad's face. You won't see Jeff's face, but what you will see is a self-portrait that Jeff has done today, because his camera is not on, of himself. And it is a pretty good likeness. I'll let you to enjoy that. I certainly hope that you appreciate the effort Jeff put into that. But anyway, I love the practical effects. I really do. They do things like when the graboids go underneath wood planked walkways, the planks burst up. They do lots of things bursting through floors, bursting through walls, the tongue tentacles lashing out and pushing over a building or a lean-to, etc. They have this really great scene, and then we'll move on to other people actually talking. This really great scene where an entire vehicle is sucked into the ground and is a station wagon. And I'd forgotten that, because obviously in future sequels, which frankly, the sequels are actually all very watchable, and there are a couple that are quite good. What I would say is, just as an aside, if you like Tremors, Tremors 2 is decent. I actually, when I first saw it, I thought it was terrible because I love Tremors so much. But now watching it back, I'm like, oh, this is very watchable. And Fred Ward is the lead in it. But Tremors 4 is fantastic. The director of this came back to do Tremors 4, I believe. And it was, it's actually a prequel. It is in the Old West when the town of Perfection was actually called something else. It's very, very cool. I definitely recommend watching it. It has lots of callbacks to this movie. They do a good job doing callbacks all the way. And like I said, except for the first two movies, Bert, the militaristic gun nut played by Michael Gross, is the lead character, and he does a great job. Okay. So some great scenes. That station wagon eating scene I mentioned, apparently it was supposed to be different a little bit. They were supposed to, because the woman in the scene is getting sucked in inside the car, and apparently she's supposed to kick out the windshield, climb out, and then still fall into the hole. But they were having lots of problems, and they were running out of night. So they were like, we can't do any more takes and still have the night light. It's going to be daytime. So they just went ahead with the vehicle getting sucked in. And honestly, I think it's better. The way it worked this way, it was more focused on the insanity of a car getting sucked into the ground than a person trying to escape these monsters. So, Jeff, if you had a standout moment, and yes, everybody, there's spoilers here, but they're not spoilers. We're just telling you what happens. Watch the movie. Seeing the movie of any kind is not the same as listening to us talk about it, right? Jeff, do you have like a standout moment, good or bad, from this movie?
I don't know. Maybe the part where they were using the sticks to like pole vault between stones. It's kind of like a fun, like old school, kind of very 90s and 80s type scene. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I get from this movie is probably very similar to what you is with the special effects. Back in 1990, this movie was made for $10 million, which is like kind of like a low end on the budget. Like the really high budget films were like 60-ish. Like if you're talking like Die Hard 2 and some of the other films that you've heard of from that year. So it is kind of like lower budget, but like, you know, even today that'd be like around like $20 million. Nobody's gonna make a movie that looks like this for $20 million, because the investors would be like, yeah, we're not giving you that much money for this, you know, 90s schlock. You know, and that's kind of sad in a way, but like, you know, we have all these like fun things to go back and like look at, you know, what it was like for them to do special effects in this time period, you know, with what they're doing. And like, you know, they did like a lot of really cool stuff, and like they made it look pretty good for like what they had to work with. Like it was all very, very practical, and they were doing like, you know, puppetry out of, you know, dirt. You know, that's kind of the thing that I'm watching for when I'm watching it. I'm not really like, you know, the narrative isn't like drawing me in any way. Like, you know, I'm getting a little nostalgia from seeing like Kevin Bacon again. But like, it's really just like, I'm like looking at the scenes and being like, oh yeah, how did they do this? How did they do that one? Cause they come up a little bit more. I wouldn't like the way that special effects are done today. I wouldn't say they're easy, cause like they're just challenging in a different way, right? But you know what I mean? It was like every little thing was thought out, at least in a different way back then. And so it's a really cool to kind of like try and work that puzzle backwards.
And a lot of things could go wrong. More things could go wrong when you're exclusively using practical effects, right?
Yeah.
Because you can fix a lot in post with 3D effects, even if it's a physical stunt, say, you can clean it up, right?
Yeah.
But a physical thing, Jaws is of course the famous perfect example, right? The animatronic shark never worked. So this big expensive thing they did that they constantly couldn't get to work, they ended up cutting out a lot of the footage, and just kind of the act of doing that actually improved the tension, right? So
yeah,
it's, you have to work with what you have. And well, I mean,
that is kind of like another thing, and almost that's stayed in, even though like modern films have we're not going to say easy or inexpensive, because like, you know, the artists and stuff still are doing great work and you know, doing really creative stuff. But it's, you know, when you're building this big thing for just one scene, you know, this big animatronic for one scene, you know, that's a very clear cost and a difficulty. And so a lot of these films back then, they really try and avoid showing their monster. The scene where like the dude doing the jackhammer into like the tar
asphalt.
You know, you get like this like blood kind of bubbling up, and then the, you know, he gets kind of dragged off. We don't see the monster at all during this like entire scene, right? And like you said with like Jaws, like not showing it is sometimes just like way better than showing it. And you know, you can see that in kind of modern cinema, that they almost learned because you know, these movies were made in like the, you know, the past, that we're doing it just for budget constraints and not wanting to show you know, all of their stuff right off at the beginning. You know, like you gotta kind of save your big moments for later in your film, so they have more impact. Yeah, and I think that you can actually kind of see that in like What Do We Do Underwater. Like you actually don't see the big monster that much, and it's you know, it's generally pretty grainy and stuff. And I think that's good, and I think that's learned from the past. So I think you can see like a lot of the kind of the throughput of this learning and how filmmaking has been done, and how it relates to today in this film.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I think it's worth saying that the if anybody's wondering, like, yeah, okay, this sounds like you like it, but why would I like it? The script is written by a writing team, SS Wilson and Brent Maddock, and they both have written a lot of successful movies, as well as some that maybe weren't so successfully adapted, such as Wild West with Will Smith. But they also wrote Short Circuit. They wrote Batteries Not Included, which we covered on this very pod several years ago. They wrote some interesting ones. They wrote Ghost Dad with professional rapist Bill Cosby. They've written many, many successful films. And those of you who are fans of Short Circuit, interesting movie that I found depressing. They are doing a reboot soon.
No. So,
well, no. You know, maybe this one won't have a dead dad. God. Anyway. So, and as far as Kevin Bacon, just to give some background on this, Kevin Bacon had been acting. A lot of people say this was his breakout. That's not quite accurate. His first film, I believe, was in Animal House in 78. Then he went to, he did lots of films and TV appearances, but his next big one was probably, Friday the 13th in 80. And then he actually had a lead in Footloose in 1986, I think it was.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
And then, then this film in 1990 was the next bigger one. And this film was actually not successful in its theatrical run, which was unfortunate. I don't know, you know, who knows why, but it hit in a year that lots of big things happened. The Ninja Turtles film, the first, you know, live action Ninja Turtles film happened. There were just many, many features that sort of eclipsed it.
Yeah, there's some good like high budget action films that came out that year.
Very
that,
much.
You know, you got to compete with.
And interestingly, though, the film became very successful because of the video rental circuit. In fact, it made over three times its I think first year video rental, or maybe its complete run, but before or then it made its theatrical run. So it was one of those things that it was very clear right away that it was going to be a cult classic, which then led, of course, to its success for similar reasons on television. Fans and fiends out there, this film is not streaming easily. I think Apple might have optioned it to stream on Apple Plus, but I'm not sure. I actually think I saw that I still had to pay for it. So anyway, but it's worth renting. It's worth purchasing. I'm looking forward to a full HD release of the series. That would be nice. But this movie especially would be great to have a 4K release, especially with some new features, maybe talking to Kevin Bacon, because Kevin Bacon had a very tumultuous relationship with this film. He actually refused to talk about it after it was a box office bomb. He said it was the worst. He was quoted as saying essentially it was the worst mistake of his life. He thought at the time that it was going to end his career. And then years and years have gone by and he started to speak differently about it. He said, in the more recent interviews, he said, you know, it was partially disappointing because it was actually the most fun I've ever had making a movie. And he said that he said it was a very bad time in his life. And so he was very negative about it. And he said, however, this was thought was interesting. He says that he usually only watches his movies once, and many of them he's never watched and he has no desire to. He said, but I have watched Tremors dozens of times. And I actually really love it now. So it's interesting to see how things change for people who actually are making the film, because we only see the product. We don't see the actual process of making the movie, which is why something like Tarantino and Rodriguez's sort of pseudo documentary about why is my brain doing this? And Their vampire movie with George Clooney, sweet lord. Anyway, why Full Tilt Boogie was so interesting. We kind of see a little bit more. We imagine a little bit more of what it's like to actually put together something like this. And as Jeff, as you said, it is considered a small budget studio film, and probably would be considered smaller now, even with inflation. I think, you know, movies have become more expensive, but it was considered relatively small. And so to have this sort of staying power, it really, it's something they should be proud of. But as I said, this was written by the writing pair, as well as the director. The director of this film, Ron Underwood, has made many, many movies we've all seen and loved, probably a few we haven't loved, still working. So the pedigree behind this film is strong behind the camera, at least for, you know, entertaining, you know, I don't want to say B features, because we tend to think of B features as actually much, much smaller features. But it's got something behind it. It's not a nothing. And these aren't new people to the game. They've been doing this for a long time. So that's why this film is very competently shot. Tad, let's pass the question that I asked Jeff. Are there any standout scenes in this movie that you always think about? Good scenes, bad scenes?
Yes.
Anything like that?
Yes. And it sounds obvious, but the pretty much the climactic scene where they defeat one of the worms by using the I want to say the pipe bombs.
Mm-hmm.
They look like pipe bombs. It's dynamite sticks, but they look like pipe bombs.
Right.
Which actually, because you made the Bugs Bunny reference, which I always thought of when they were digging through the ground, it would be so much funnier if they just used sticks of dynamite. Just throw dynamite. But yes, that scene where they're tricking it and they, I don't actually understand. Like, I've rewatched that scene so many times and I really don't understand how they trick the worm this way. But they, you know what, it's at the end. They're luring it to the edge of the cliff. And then they throw the dynamite behind it. And that's supposed to trick it into going through the cliff.
It's not supposed to trick it. It blows it forward.
Is that how it works? Because they threw it above ground.
Yes, I believe so.
That doesn't make sense, Jeff? Nathan.
So that was one interpretation I had. I wasn't 100% clear that's what it was, but that was like my first thought. My second thought was it was a distraction. So like it created...
it wasn't paying attention to where it's going.
It wasn't paying attention to where it was going.
I get that too. And frankly, it doesn't fucking matter, because the point is that they go, hey, wait, these things can't see and they're stupid enough that they might go through. And they were like, oh, good, it worked. And that thing flying out the side of the cliff and falling and then splatting. And then this movie is viscerally impressive in terms of like how its special effects work. Like you love the practical effects. And you didn't somehow mention all the guts,
the goo,
and goo in
the ketchup, like, and usually it looks like SpaghettiOs through all the series. It looks like SpaghettiOs it comes out of it.
It's
and
really
they make it supposed to stink, so it always gives the actors a nice thing to react to.
Yes,
I like that SpaghettiOs thing, because it's not red,
right?
It's like it's got that kind of yellowish red.
Right, kind of the orange. Yeah. You're like, oh, is this tomato sauce? They're like, it's orange. It's
just
orange
enough
sauce.
Just enough to make it feel like it's not of this planet, almost.
Almost
like,
insectoid, right?
Yeah, that's a goo that doesn't come out of something that's normal. Like, you've squished bugs, Nate. You know that's not the color that comes out of bugs when you squish them.
I have done much penance for squishing bugs as a child.
As have we all.
Yes.
We have all repented, but still, you know what bug squish looks like.
Unfortunately.
Point being is that... when it hits the ground, it's really funny. Even as a kid, I went, my brain just went, that bug was really heavy, because it just goes,
the gravity itself.
Out. Like it was like it, you can tell that there was a lot of heft behind that thing. But I even to this day, that scene really stands out to me, because it's gross, but at the same time, it's not like nauseating. It's not Boxer's Omen, because I love going back to that viscerally, like reprehensible when you watch it. It's just like, ew, squished bug. And that's about as much as you get. And then you're like, ah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with, it doesn't quite matter what the actual purpose of throwing the dynamite was, which is why I don't think they even bother telling us, because I can never focus on anything but that great explosion of rock when the giant worm bursts fully out of the side of the cliff. And then hits the ground. Like it's it is the centerpiece moment. And, you know, it's one of those scenes that I think has actually been kind of pulled for many other features thereafter, of different types. So it's, there's a reason why it's remembered fondly. Well, okay. So we've talked about this movie. I think Jeff kind of hit on this as well. It's not a complicated film. And in some ways, that's a lot better to me when you get to a movie that has some sort of, it's a monster movie, but it's supposed to be based in the real world, right? A lot of times they get so hung up in explaining the science that they've developed behind it, you know, midichlorians, et cetera, that it's boring. And also it takes away some of the mystery. If you're being attacked in the desert by a monster no one's ever heard of or seen before, then you're not going to be like, I found out where it's from, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, and they have a scientist, but she's like what, a seismologist. So it's not like she's a biologist, right?
Yeah.
So she gives some initial theories that any of us would come up with probably. And it's believable. It's not like they, you know, it's like, oh, they're from before time was recorded. Oh, I think they're aliens. You know, by the way, they still never really address this in most of the sequels, but I think they're aliens. It doesn't make any sense.
They're
not
too.
In the fossil record. They got to be aliens.
And they are most certainly. And by the way, before I forget, Nate, I almost forgot that when I was rewatching this for, I don't know, the 67th time, I'm sure, this movie feels like the most expensive MST3K movie that was ever made, and Tom Servo doesn't need to narrate it because you're doing it the entire time you're watching it. This is that kind of movie where you are just thinking how silly it is and you're still enjoying it. But how, you know, I've watched so much MST3K and it just kind of fits in that, but at the same time it's always just a step above.
Right.
This movie, like we've been talking about, this movie just fits a certain space that no other movie does, which is probably why it has been, like I said, shoved by the machine. It fit a space that no one knew needed to fit in. It's tame sci-fi. It's highly entertaining. It's funny. It's endearing. It's just gross enough. It still looks great. Like, the movie transfer still looks fantastic. It was filmed on
real stock.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the special effects, it's the solidest B movie I could ever think of. And I don't mean B movie. I mean like B as in not B minus, not B plus. It's just a B. It's not memorable, but you will still remember everything the moment that you go, wait a minute, Tremors. And then you see the friggin' worm coming out of the side of the cliff. And you're like, that movie with Kevin Bacon when he had long hair.
Yep.
No. Yeah, it's a weird spot.
So I take it then that you recommend Tremors, but
this is required watching. Like I said, in the beginning, this is a required watch. If you are listening to this podcast, if you have not watched this dozens of times accidentally, you better go watch it. And then you will understand everything that we've just been talking about.
And I'm wondering how those of you out there who haven't seen this film and will now go see it, I'm wondering how you will experience it, because it's sort of interesting. I feel like we are promoting the film, and we'll talk to Jeff for his opinion shortly, but I feel like we're promoting the film, but at the same time saying that it's not like peak excellence. It's somehow peak consumability. You know what I mean? Like, and so I wonder if you can be oversold when somebody's telling you that it's not, you know, that it's fun, but not like unbelievable. So anyway, I'm curious to hear about that. So you can go ahead and let us know on the Insta or our email, etc. Jeff, would you recommend Tremors 1990 with Kevin Bacon, Fred Ward, Michael Gross, Reba McEntire, and tons of other wonderful people, Victor Wong? Would you recommend it to listeners? And if so, why and to who?
Yeah, I think this one's a good fun watch. I don't think anybody's going to waste the hour and 30 minutes or whatever that's that this thing has runtime. 136. Yeah, it's a fine film. In that, you know, you'll like the characters, you'll find the premise fun. You might give a shit when they're on the roof and it starts to collapse and you're worried about them. But yeah, it's just, I mean, to me, I think the people that are really gonna like it are just like film nerds. Because it really has that time capsule-y feel. You like really see kind of, you know, not how like the crazy biggest budget film is made, because like, you know, when you get really, really up there, they can really transcend their time in some cases. This is really like a 1990s film. This is like what you'd get for a film in that period. I love going back and just like seeing like how they did it.
Totally. And I think you kind of hit on the head too. We've talked this about, or we mentioned this about a fair number of movies that we watch, and there's good reason for it. This is a great movie to watch if you want to make, or if you're in the process of making your own movie and you need to be inspired on how to make some effects easy, but also effective. Because not saying that there wasn't a lot of effort, like the tunnel digging effects and things like that, and the ground popping up, they had effects. Like there were air jacks or various things doing a lot of that. So it's not, these are not simple things they did in the grand scheme of things, but they were not complicated to the level of, even Ninja Turtles, where they had to do all the animatronics for the features and work. So it's a good place to look for inspiration. Jeff said that it's like a good 90s time capsule. And you're right, it's 1990. So it's also kind of that, it's that weird 80s, early middle period, or late middle 80s and early 90s. So the soundtrack's pretty great. You've got Tanya Tucker. You have, of course, Reba McEntire has a track on there. But then you also have what is sort of touted as the main song from the soundtrack is You Are the One by Fahrenheit. So if that doesn't scream 1990 to you, I don't really know what does. And of course, for me, I absolutely recommend Tremors. I just think it's a really fun movie. I can watch it at any point in time. And as Tad said, you're going to be narrating it in your head. If you watch it with a couple of other people and you can watch it with family, et cetera, it's not super gruesome. There's a couple of scenes maybe that there's a severed head or something, but it's not really, it's nothing as gratuitous, even except for maybe the slobbery SpaghettiOs gore. But even that's not over the top. It's just more than the rest of it. You can watch it with anyone. And it's not one of those movies that takes place heavily at night, which tends to make things, I think, a little more ominous. For example, I adore Critters, but I think Critters is a little bit, it feels a little bit more adult than, say, Tremors, because it's all at night. It actually can be scary. Something silly or stupid can actually be scary at night. And we don't get much of that here. It's bright desert day. And that somehow takes a lot of the sting out of it and moves it a little more into the action comedy than the horror element. And like I said, with family and friends, you will be narrating it as you go along. You'll all have something to say, but at the same time as you're sort of savaging the film for fun, you're also really enjoying it. So thank you all so much for listening to this part one episode of Look Out Below. Next week, we have 1990, again, same year, 1990 sequel film, The Gate 2, Trespassers. The Gate, the first one, is, which we'll quickly talk about on that episode, is a cult classic of its own right with some fantastic practical effects. And it's one of those movies where kids get into some demonic trouble and have to fight some monsters. That's a long lineage of films that, you know, contribute to all sorts of contemporary things like Stranger Things, most Steven Spielberg produced films now, all sorts of things. So catch us next week. And thank you all so much. I do want to give one shout out to our movie releasing. If you don't know, we do release films usually every month. These are low budget, out of print, special exclusive films and collector's editions that we release at a very good price, both through our subscription service, which you can go to at patreon.com/cultandclassicfilms, or via our web store, which you can get at cultandclassicfilms.com. These give money directly to the hands of filmmakers. And when a film doesn't have any filmmakers to claim rights, like our January release of the North Korean monster movie, big monster movie, their Godzilla competitor, Pulgasari, we donate it to charity. So we are all about getting money to those that need it. Thank you all so much. Check out our stuff and listen next week for part two of this series on cult and classic films. To play us out, as always, is The Chud with All About Evil.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cult and Classic Podcast. This podcast is important to me, but what's more important are the rights, privileges, and freedom from violence of everyone in this country and in this world. And that means supporting Black Lives Matter. If you'd like to make a donation, please go ahead and visit cultandclassicpodcast.com, where we have a list of places you can donate and help out. And please stay safe.